Welcome to Association Nation. From digital content to social strategy, print power to video value, engagement to conversion, we cover the content marketing topics that matter most to your members. Today, we're talking about why associations need to future-proof to overcome current challenges and those that are coming up fast. Picture association members a mere two decades ago. When they wanted information about their profession, their industry, their interest, whatever bound them together as a group, they turned to their association magazine or journals. When they wanted to network, association conferences were a no-brainer. When they wanted training or the latest research from their fields, they turned to you. That's because just two decades ago, the internet simply wasn't the same creature as it is today. Today, members can find the information they seek with a quick search on a device that fits in their pockets, and usually it's free. When they want networking, they turn to social networks and abundant live events. Even the competition for industry training has grown. That's why associations who want to survive and thrive need to future-proof. They need to look at content that sets their credible expertise and authority apart from the abundant but questionable resources at their disposal. They need to find audiences of all ages and demographics where they live and where they work. That's what we're talking about today. How do you redefine your association's future? Our guest today just happens to be the man in charge of future-proofing our own organization, Imagination's founder, CEO, and president, Jim Myers. Jim has created a white paper, Future Proof, the four M's that redefine your association's future. It's designed to help associations identify the biggest current and future challenges and creative ways to overcome them. Welcome, Jim. Why don't you walk us through how you started thinking about future-proofing as a major need?
Well, you know, Jamie, we've worked with associations for a long time. Today we have about a dozen associations. And about a year ago, I asked seven or eight of our people here who work with our association clients to give me their ideas on what they think some of the biggest obstacles are for associations. And I got back some amazing responses. And when we started to look at it, it really came down to four core areas, which we now call the four M's. And as we expanded on each of those, you know, we began to see that there were obviously not only obstacles, but there were opportunities for associations. And that really was the genesis of the four M's.
Great. So when we take a look at the first M, which is member value, you know, one thing that we see now in these times are a lot of associations are really thinking about evolving their membership models. You know, when we think about associations doing really creative things on the membership front, what trends are you really seeing kind of bubble to the top?
Associations historically existed to provide a value to their members, which was to bring members that had common interests together and give them an opportunity to share ideas and share experiences with each other, and for the association to provide expertise in that particular area. And what's really changed all that is the internet and digital. You know, a few years ago, it became possible for associations members to contact each other or to find other chat boards or websites that talked about the same topics that they were interested in. And so associations began to lose some of their perceived authority with members or prospective members, and target audiences began to question what the value was for associations. So associations really have had to rethink their entire value structure, or at least they should be rethinking their entire value structure as they move forward, so that they can not only keep those members that they have today, but bring in new members as well.
You know, one thing that I wanted to talk a little bit about is how many associations in the effort to go completely digital started cutting a lot of what members may have perceived as their big benefits. So we think about a lot of organizations potentially cutting their monthly magazine or just cutting out, you know, whole offerings to save money, but then not really making up for that value by being completely technologically prepared for that transition.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. We've worked with associations for 23 years now, and I've never seen a member survey that didn't rank their print magazine as the number one, two, or three benefit of membership. And we've seen many associations cut back or even eliminate their print magazines, primarily driven by cost. And of course, part of that is advertising. Print advertising has declined, and so the magazine has become more costly for an association. You know, I look at it as an investment in their membership. It's not just a profit center which should break even, but if you don't have the vehicle that delivers thought leadership for your association to your members, then what do you have? That's not to say that you shouldn't clearly have other channels of communication with your members, in the digital world. But, I have often thought with some associations that they're cutting off their nose to spite their face by eliminating one of the number one or number two value items that they have with their membership.
I think something that you said is everyone is a thought leader now, or everyone wants to be a thought leader now. So what qualities and differentiators do you think that associations have that, brands or, media brands can't compete with?
Well, I think thought leadership always comes down to expertise, and associations, because they live and breathe the topic or the ideas of the association, they really understand better than anyone, what the challenges are, what the opportunities are that their members are facing in their particular interest. To me, it's that expertise, and it's also bringing context. It's easy to put out, retweet an article or to, put out some kind of post or blog without really having the context behind what it really means to you if you're in a certain industry or if you're in a certain profession. So I think it's that expertise and context put together, which makes it real for the member.
So we'll move on to M number two, which is myopia. So really the mistake that many associations make, which is that they're always looking back instead of looking ahead. I think this weaves throughout many parts of organizations, and it can really kind of bleed into the culture of your overall organization. Do you want to talk to me a little bit about some of the major challenges associations have when they're looking back instead of looking forward?
A lot of the associations we've seen where, their leadership has come up through the ranks over a period of a number of years, maybe 10, 20, 30 years. And so there is a tendency to continue to function the way the association always has, when really what's needed in times like this is to disrupt the thinking within the association and to disrupt the thinking of their members and prospective members of what the association is for the future. And that's a tough change to make, but I think it's something critical that associations have to deal with.
So what are some of the big challenges that are the roadblocks that are there that are preventing these associations from disruption?
Oftentimes what we hear is that the board really isn't prepared to lead the association or to lead the executive group of the association. And so they tend to focus either on micromanaging some of the activities of the association, or they really just don't look to make a big change because they really aren't comfortable with that kind of decision-making authority. So the board culture and the relationship with the executive team is one area. The other thing that we see, and again, this is common with many organizations, not just with associations, but I think it's particularly common in associations, which is organizational silos. Associations typically have membership and advocacy and content or knowledge or other kinds of silos, and each of those have historically functioned independently. They've had their own marketing budgets. They do their own types of communication with members. They're driven by their particular goal, whatever that might be. And that really comes off to the member as being very disjointed, having those different silos contact them with messages about what they should be doing or what they should be buying or what they should be going to. And the members become confused because the messages are not aligned. And then just the lack of innovation that we generally see in associations, where they're not thinking about what do I need to do next. I think some things I've read recently in the Harvard Business Review that talk about getting executives in the room and saying, what could kill us as an organization? What are the things out there that could, if they happened, stop us dead in our tracks, that no one would ever become a member for us again, that no one would ever take us seriously again, and look at those worst case scenarios and then reverse those and think, what can we do to prevent that from ever happening, as a way of perhaps not only engaging some new ideas, but coming up with some innovation for the association that's not going to be there otherwise.
Yeah, to me, I think it comes down to a lot on the board and the staff side of having transformational leaders who aren't afraid to ask the hard questions and who are not risk averse. Now, obviously, you don't want someone who's going to gamble on behalf of your organization.
Absolutely.
But you want people who are able to make smart and educated but innovative decisions on behalf of your org.
I think you're absolutely right about that.
Great. So let's move on to the third M, which is one that's kind of funny because we did a podcast previously where we interviewed a bunch of millennials and we asked them like what their wishes are for the future. And one said, I never want to hear the word millennial ever again.
Right.
So sorry if she's listening. But let's talk a little bit about millennials. Why do associations have so many challenges with the millennial audience? And what traits do these millennials have that, you know, make associations just not resonate?
I talk about it as millennials plus, because right behind them, you got the Gen Z coming on as well. And that could be just as big a problem. But basically, overall, associations are struggling with getting new members. And if you look at the average membership audience, you see that typically their membership is on the older side, continuing obviously to age as we all are. And part of that is goes back to the two M's we've already talked about, is like what value are you presenting to that millennial or to that Gen Z person? And again, when you look at those two generations, you see that they're obviously very educated, they're tech savvy. They tend not to be joiners, but on the other hand, when they find something they're passionate about, they're all in. And so, how do you attract that kind of a member when your organization just isn't showing the passion that's going to attract that new member? I think first, millennials are looking for that passion and for that expertise and that transparency and creativity. I think those are the kind of things that they look for, something that's new, something fresh, something different, those types of things. And so, one of my favorite associations is the Outdoor Industry Association. And if you haven't seen their website, you should really check it out. I mean, it's an association that represents the outdoor activities industry, but because most of those members are targeting younger audiences like millennials and Gen Z, to mountain bike or ski or different outdoor activities. When you go to their website, you see just an incredibly fresh and dynamic website with lots of great content, terrific graphics. But you also see what they believe in terms of environmental issues and social issues, health issues, those types of things that they've aligned themselves with. And that speaks right away to that millennial audience.
Great. And as organizations are looking inward and looking at the people that they hire, obviously, if you are trying to target millennials, you may want to have some representation from that audience and beyond on your staff. As someone who is CEO of a company who has many millennials, do you have advice for people out there who are looking to, attract and retain millennial talent?
Right. Well, it's the same thing as your members. Again, you're talking about the same thing, is how do I attract an employee or a member that's looking for passion and expertise and the ability to help them move ahead in their career, to exhibit what really makes you special as an organization and what kind of opportunities there are for them to move ahead. So, when we look at millennials here at Imagination, we're constantly looking for connecting with them in a very real and positive way, being as transparent as possible with them, giving them opportunities to grow as individuals. And I think you're onto something in terms of associations. We see all different ages of people working at associations, but very rarely do we find millennials that have real authority in the association. Oftentimes we'll hear someone that we work with who'll say, well, I just don't have the authority to do that, or they're never going to go for that idea, or I'll never get a budget for that, or I'll never get that passed. Those are the kind of things that kill innovation and kill the opportunity for the association to move ahead. So, not only having millennials working in your organization, but giving millennials the opportunities to have real authority, to be heard, and at least to have their ideas considered by the leadership of an association so that there can be changes and innovation in the organization.
So as we move on to messaging, I think one thing that organizations often challenge with is how much do we talk about ourselves as an organization and what we do for you as our audience member versus how much do we talk about the challenges of our audience and address the challenges of our audience and provide them with resources to solve their most important problems? What's your kind of POV there?
Yeah, well, the messaging being our fourth M, again, comes back to something that we feel very passionate about, which is that most associations either have very different messaging going out throughout their membership base because they have this siloed kind of mentality, or because they talk too much about themselves and not enough about what they can do for their members. But also thinking about the channels of delivery that you utilize to get to that particular audience. I think the storytelling part goes back to the context that we talked about earlier, where you're not just giving them information, but you're putting it into context with them, and you're bringing stories from your members to other members. You know, members love to learn from other members. That's part of why they started with an association in the first place. It's part of the value that you provide as an association. So I think, bringing storytelling in to your members with stories about other members and how they've solved a problem or how they faced a challenge or how they've overcome a challenge, is critical. And the storytelling just needs to be more compelling. It needs to be more personal.
And when you think about coming up with these plans and rolling out different channels and different content types and things like that, how do associations attack that from the front end? Because unless you're, planning that from the front, from an audience perspective, it means nothing. So do you have any advice from a, strategic standpoint, how to identify who your audiences are and plan down from there rather than try to, try everything and see what sticks?
Right. Yeah. I think a lot of associations don't even have a strategic plan, a five-year plan that says this is who our audiences are and these are the products we're going to offer and the services we're going to offer and this is how we're going to do it. But assuming that they have that strategy, where we always start is with a content audit. Once we understand what audiences are opportunities for the association, we then go back and audit the content of an association. And what most organizations and usually associations are shocked by is the amount of content that they're creating and the number of people that are preparing that content and the number of ways that it's going out to that audience. In many cases, their members are being bombarded by content, but again, it's not focused. It's not laddering up to any particular strategy. It's coming out as a based on, individual priorities of those different silos. And so, a content audit uncovers, where you are today, what content you're creating, where it resides, how it's being used. And then we can compare that to other best practices, other associations, what they're doing, what's worked, what hasn't worked. Once that audit's completed, then we typically look at, where is there opportunities either to fill holes with existing audiences or where can we provide, new content and new original exciting ways of engaging their members that the everyday operations of the association just doesn't see.
Yeah, I think a lot of times organizations are thinking of their audience as split by potentially like their member type, for example. Like we have a student member, we have a fellow, and we have a resident member, for example, if you're an organization that's in healthcare. But you think of your audience like that rather than identifying those segments and breaking those down into human people and their behaviors and developing content from there.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And one of the critical components that we work on with our new clients is building a buyer journey. Journeys are what you just talked about, understanding where people are entering the organization, what their needs are at that time. Then as you hopefully fulfill those needs, how those people progress over time. Their needs might change, their level of sophistication might change. You have to think about that entire journey and then go back and look at your strategy and your content plan to make sure that you're meeting all of those different steps and that you're actually moving people along. You're giving them a reason to stay with the association by proving that there's value all along the path for that individual member from your association.
And when it comes down to ensuring consistent messaging across your organization, what do you think the key thing is that organizations need to do? Establish a lead internally, generate kind of overall buy-in across the organization? Should there be a clearinghouse for all content going out? That's a question we get really quite often.
I think in our opinion, what works best is when there is a clear content leader. Many organizations on the for-profit side today have chief content officers. We have one here at Imagination. And I think that role is something that's critical. Someone who really orchestrates all the content in the organization and constantly is looking at the members and the audiences and determining how best to fill those needs along that entire buyer journey. From there, I think the next step is that once you put that strategy together, it needs to be communicated and it needs to be reinforced constantly.
So for Future Proof as a whole, what's really the bottom line? What is the one thing that associations should take away from this as, you know, their starting point for transforming their organization or, you know, thinking about how their organization is going to exist and advance into the future?
I think there's two words that I think about. One is change and one is talent. Things are not only going to continue to change, they're going to change faster and faster. We've seen the number of organizations who have completely been disrupted over the past 10 years to just multiply dramatically. And for associations, they have to accept the change is here to stay and that it's going to continue to even come faster at them. So, you know, the challenge will be how do we deal with that change? How do we get ahead of that change? And how do we have the foresight to understand what we need to do differently in the future if we want to continue to exist as an association? And a big part of that is the second word, which is talent. You know, do I have the talent as an organization to deal with change and to come up with those new ideas and those new strategies that will continue to allow us to be successful?
Let's close our episode with my favorite exercise, I Like, I Wish. I like that associations are reaching out to future members, including millennials. I wish more would move beyond putting the intern in charge of social media and into truly strategic outreach. I also wish they started thinking more about generations to come when millennials will be old news. I like that associations are thinking globally like most major corporations have been doing for decades. I wish more organizations would realize that being truly global trickles down into the fine details of the content we create, the way we source it, the language we use in it, and how we distribute it. I like that many associations are seeing that change is needed to keep up with the fast-paced, digital-centric world we live in today. But I wish they realized that talent transformation in their staff, boards of directors, executive leadership, and even volunteers is the key to truly changing their direction. Thanks for joining us. Be sure to download the Future Proof white paper at imaginepub.com/futureproof and subscribe to Association Nation on iTunes or Google Play for future episodes.